Gates, the founder and CEO of Microsoft for many years and one of the richest men in the world off and on. He's a stated atheist. But he has one of the largest foundations right now in the world, and he's using his vast wealth to do this job of taking care of the earth and to cure diseases and to cure problems in Africa and other countries. And it's actually a job that God has given him to do, whether he recognizes it or not. And he's doing it. We as people, this is what we are to do. We may forget God in many cases, which is why things often don't work so well. Okay? But we're still on the project. It hasn't stopped. In fact, in our nature, we are actually perfectly fitted for what Moses wrote down as the charge that God put on us when we were first created. We are actually perfectly fitted for this task. We have an important purpose and responsibility that God has given us. Then we go to verses, the next verses, 28 to 31. And God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth." So we've done pretty good on that first part. There's 7.5 billion people in the world today. Okay? We have been fruitful and we have multiplied really, really well. Then God said, "Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of the earth and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast on the earth and every bird of the heavens and to everything that creeps on the ground, on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food." The vegans will like that one. And it was so. All right, there's something for all of us in there. And God saw everything he had made, and behold, it was very good. Yeah, I think words like good and very good don't need a lot of adjectives added to them when you are the God of the universe. I think just when you say good, it's like, this is phenomenal. This is just out of this world. This is just, wow. Okay? It's very good. And there was evening and there was morning, the sixth day. So God put human beings in charge of this very good creation. And in verse 31, it says that when God saw everything that he had made was very good. Now, some of you see that the good in the created creatures in nature. In fact, most of us probably sort of agree if we think about it. Yeah. Yeah, what God made is really good. But we have some doubts when it comes to human beings. See, people are the problem, right? Would the world not have been better off if God had just stopped before creating human beings? Why did God say that people are very good? What is good about them? I know some people that don't look good. I've been told very recently I'm not good. I'm going to stick with God's opinion of me. Okay? But yeah, sometimes we're not good. You see, God says people are to be different from everything else in creation. Everything. We were created to have a special relationship with God and to do our work in that relationship. We were to work in a power that was not our own. It is a very big job to have dominion over the earth, especially when it is hard to have dominion over your backyard or over your kids. A lot of things are at work here, and it's rather hard to control all of these things here. There's a lot going on. We have to go to the second chapter of Genesis to understand the uniqueness of people compared to the rest of creation. In chapter 2, verse 7, "Then the Lord formed the man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living creature." Notice that man was not made first an animal and then become a human being. He wasn't a monkey before he was a man. Okay? The man became a human being when God breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. So there was a special creative fusion of something that was like God that was put into man at that moment. And it was more than breath. It was more than air. See, the breath of life isn't the oxygen in our lungs. God didn't give mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. God doesn't actually literally breathe. I've got news. He's spirit. Okay? He's spirit. He doesn't have lungs. But God is spirit, and the word spirit is breath and is also wind. It's a parallel, it's actually the same word that's used in the scriptures. Okay? He is spirit, and he infused the special being that he had created with spirit. That's what makes human beings unique and brings them special value. This is what makes you unique, and it makes each one of us unique in this creation. And this uniqueness allows us to participate with God, to relate to God. We can participate in the management of this earth because we have this special thing inside of us. Think about this. It's hard to believe that we are spirit-infused beings with such power and privilege and responsibility. You might feel like you are very, very far from being in the business of governing the earth. Your little piece of dominion in this earth is really, really small, right? But why do we feel we're so far away from it? One problem is we have accepted an image that the world has imposed on us that is in direct opposition to Jesus' teaching, and it hinders us from stepping into the dignity and the importance that we've been given as children of God. You see, every human being, in fact, even as humans, every human being is a special creation of spirit, living, if you will, in the hands of God. Jesus even said that every child has a guardian angel looking after them. Every child. Jesus said that in a society where children were not valued, okay? And he gave them supreme value because they were people, God's creation. In fact, he said it'd be better if somebody does anything bad to a child. They should have a millstone hung around the neck and thrown in the ocean. He valued life so much. But what happens? A child comes into this world and is often treated as anything but precious. Okay? As anything but a wonderful creation. One of the hardest things for us to do is to keep this preciousness and this wonder in our minds as we approach every human being we deal with. As we walk down a street, as we walk the hallways at work or school, as we sit in an airplane, as we visit a prison, every human being we see is precious. For sure, many people don't look or act like they're very precious. Perhaps they're even hostile and dangerous to be around. We hurt one another in so many ways. We prick each other like porcupines. Okay, but what's the point? We have a really, really hard time imagining people and what they're really like as God made them. Thus, the psalmist asks the question in Psalm 8, verse 4, what are human beings that you are mindful of them? We've messed up. The psalmist saw the way that God fawns over human beings. He fawns over them. And he realized we must be something much greater than what we appear to be. Because we don't appear real great. Okay? Interestingly enough, most people, if not all people, don't actually think highly enough of themselves. You know, we got these things, you know, we kind of irks us when we have sayings about people that think too much of themselves, too highly of themselves, right? We get negative about that. In fact, I may never have met a person who thought highly of himself or herself based on how highly God thinks of each person. Interesting. We have a really hard time understanding why anyone would place that much value on us for who we are as we are. Let me ask you a question about your self-perceived value. Okay? If you lived in the slave trade days, different time, different place, you're a slave in the slave trade days, and you were a slave that was for sale in the market, okay, in your market square, and an auction starts, and someone was going to make you an offer based on your worth, how much do you think that they would be willing to pay for you? Now, I'm sorry, there might be a few people that even gets kind of close to home. But how much would you be worth if somebody was going to pay for you? Now, how you answered that question in your head, like in your mind just now, has a lot to do with how our society values people in general. You're a part of a culture around you that values people in a certain way. Many of us would not think we would raise much money at such an auction. We're not worth much. In fact, I bet some of you thought about, well, wait a second, how much do I make per year? What's the return on investment if someone were to invest in me? Okay? It's an economic question at that point. Some of you may have thought, well, maybe if I've got a relative out there, they're going to put more value on in how much money I make, and maybe they would, for a certain price, buy me. We have lots of different ways of answering the question. Jesus understood this situation. And if we go to Matthew 26, verse 16, he says this, For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what shall a man give in return for his soul? So that's that second question. What shall a man give in return for his soul? You are the one that Jesus is actually talking about. In fact, Jesus is talking to you, and that's why he words this question the way he words it. You, in a sense, you are the only one who can decide what your soul is worth, what you are worth, and then trade it for something that you deem to be more valuable. So I ask you, how much are you worth? What would you trade for your soul? What would you trade for your soul? You are the only one who can decide this and exchange your very self for anything. What would you sell your soul for? This past week, despite the tragedy in Iran, CGAD was spending more time on the $70 million lottery that was being held by Lotto Quebec. There were lineups in every day panner in the province to buy tickets. For many people, life is chance. They think they're here by chance and they will die by chance, and they throw their money at chance because they believe in chance. Okay? There's nothing precious about chance. Nothing except the wild hope of maybe buying some short-term happiness, relaxation, or whatever it is they're after. I think they said the chance of winning was like 1 in 30 million or something crazy. That's it. You'd give that in return for your soul? What would we give? What makes human beings so precious? It is this. Okay, in God, we are capable of being faithful to God and committed to the promotion of good in this world, and to live in this relationship with the creator of the universe, to rule with him in this world. This is what we have been placed here to do. Humans are capable of giving their lives for these things, even to the point of dying for them. Jesus said, no one has greater love than this, than to lay down one's life for one's friends. The Apostle Paul tells something about the value of people in Romans 5, verse 8. But God shows his love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. That is, while we were still in rebellion against God, we were hostile, we were the jerks, okay? We were still God-haters, and Christ died for us. What do we learn from that? Well, people are valuable even if they're doing nothing. Nothing. In fact, worse than nothing. People have value. So much value that Jesus came and died for us. We do not have to earn our basic value. We do not have to earn our value. Nevertheless, God put us here to make a difference. We have a world to govern, okay? A creation to govern. Jesus confirmed that we are here to make a difference. And he says in Matthew 5, verse 16, in the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is heaven. Interesting, okay? We have good works. We have been given this job of managing this earth. This is a very unusual mandate that we have. And when we manage this well, it gives glory to the Father who is in heaven. This one verse encapsulates why there are people. There are people to shine, doing good works, and thereby glorifying God. And it is an active process, and we are to live our lives doing this. God is the source of all that goodness, and we are here to let that light shine through all that we do. We are of extreme value to begin with, and we fulfill that value by our good works. By our good works. Life is made even more valuable, you could say, by the sacrifices made by those who give themselves up for God, or to God and for God, and for every good thing that God has made. That is what God put us here for. He put us here for a reason. So life is a process of transition and transformation, right? The Bible talks about sanctification, transformation of our lives towards being like Christ. So in this brief period of time and space, okay, so we live in a particular time, in the history of time in the world. We got this little piece in here. And in this whole globe, we've got this little geography, very small geography, where we find ourselves. We live in this particular space, right, and particular slice of time. But in there, we have the opportunity to be everything God intended us to be in relationship to Him and to those around us and to the world that God put us in. We have the potential to create something incredibly good and precious. And God is going to bring it to pass with or without us. Okay? If we miss our opportunity to participate with Him, we miss our chance. But God is not going to be defeated in this. God is going to create a community of loving, creative, intelligent, loyal, faithful, and powerful human beings, and they are going to rule the earth. He's very clear about this in the scriptures. They are going to rule the earth. It is going to come to pass. If you want to be part of that, just get on board. And it's in the scriptures right from the very first chapter right through to the final chapter. So what is our role to be today? We could look at it from so many angles. It is as vast as the Bible is vast, as the world is grand, and as there are varieties of people and situations in this world. As we said, it's a big world and a big mandate with 7.5 billion people created by God, needing Him, and with an entire creation to care for. It's a vast mandate. We have lots to do. We have lots to do. You know, part of the mandate was elaborated on by Jesus as He parted for heaven. Acts 1 verse 68, and I'm going to preach more on this next week. Jesus is giving His last words to His followers. Typically, the last words of someone are really significant, right? So when He had come together, they asked Him, Lord, will You at this time restore the kingdom to Israel? So they were thinking that one way God was going to manage this dominion was to establish His kingdom on this earth, right? And they were just waiting for that. And He said to them, it is not for you to know times or seasons that the Father has fixed by His own authority, but you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be My witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the end of the earth. Notice how God's very quickly He takes us from our little piece of the world, and He takes us right out there. It never stops. We have been given responsibility and dominion over all of creation and for all the people in it. We are to witness the goodness of God and the good news of God right where we are in our personal Jerusalem, whether that be Hudson, St. Lazare, Vaudreuil, Lancaster, or wherever you live or work or interact with people, okay? It's to be in the area around us right where we are, the greater area around us, the MRC of Vaudreuil-Soulanges, if you will, the greater Montreal area, the province of Quebec, the country of Canada, and everywhere in the world. That's what He's saying. That's what He means by Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. If you study the geography of that, it just gets bigger and bigger as we go out. Remember how God sees people? How Jesus, the great shepherd, sees people? God sees people as having phenomenal value. Part of our mandate, okay, to let our light shine before others so that they might give glory to God. Part of that mandate is to tell the story of the good news of the gospel. That's just one aspect of all of them. It could be the environmental side of things. It could be sharing the gospel side. All of this is part of that responsibility. To explain to our friends and our families and members and coworkers and neighbors how valuable they are and how much God values them and what Jesus therefore did for them. And that they can enter into this valuable relationship the same as we have. We are called to do this as individuals. We're called to do this as a church. You know, this gathering, if you will, of the people of God in this area. Sometimes it's the people of God that trips us up the most. Isn't that weird? Right? It is said that leading a church would be a lot easier if we didn't have to deal with people. Right? But it's funny because there's only a church if we have people. That sentence is cliche, but it's true. Dealing with people is messy and sometimes painful, often painful. Not only do we have to deal with people, but we have to love them. I can deal with them, but I can't love them. It's the loving part that can be really difficult. Church members can be critics. That's nice. Church members can be bullies. Church members can be undependable. Church members can be fickle. Perhaps most aren't, but the few that are make up for the rest sometimes, right? It seems, anyway. It seems. But friends, church members are not our obstacles. Our problem is that we don't see people as God sees them. If we did, we would also have God's heart for them. Problem people are valuable people. They are treasured people. You were a problem person for God. You were a problem person for God when he sent Jesus to die. Remember, you were an enemy of God. You were hostile to him, and he died for you. While you were still an enemy in rebellion, he said, Jesus created the church for the redemption of the world. This is part of the mandate of managing this world and bringing glory to God through the management of it. The church is one of his primary vehicles for the redemption of this world. By the way, in Romans 8, all of creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. All of creation is yearning for redemption. All of creation is people, living creatures, plants, oceans, land, everything God creating is waiting for us to do our jobs. And God put us in charge, whether that be evangelism or taking care of the environments. I don't think God splits hairs. It's all of his, and he's given us to manage it. In God, we have everything that's needed. Okay? We lack nothing. We have Jesus as our shepherd. We have all the resources we need to do the job that Jesus gave us to do as he parted. The one that was given in Genesis already, and the one that's still being repeated at the end of Revelation. As a church, not just as individuals, we lack nothing. We lack nothing. Nothing. We actually have enough money. You look at the budget and say, no, we don't have enough money. Yes, we have enough money. Because we lack nothing in God. We have enough people, but we're just a small crowd. We have enough people. We have adequate facilities. We're great. We're improving it. It's not done yet. We have good enough facilities. We have enough people to reach. Yeah, we're no question about that. Yeah, just in our little area here, there's 50,000 people along Highway 40 from Vaudreuil to the border on the villages on each side. Only one church, ours. There's lots of people to reach. We have the right age people in our church. We got all sorts of ages, but it wouldn't matter if we're all old or all young. We have the right age people in our church. God's not in the business of doing things wrong. We just don't see things through God's eyes. We have no business to complain about the lack of resources because we lack nothing. Not because I say it, not because of a pep talk. I can do that with my sales teams. I give them pep talk. Hey, you're there, you've done it already. But they aren't there and they haven't done it. There's no promise they'll get it because I'm not God. God doesn't give pep talks. God gives truth. Okay? We lack nothing. It does us no good to imagine how much easier or better our church would be if we just had something else or someone else. It does us no good. We have no limitation if Jesus is our shepherd and the all-powerful and all-sufficient God is our God and we submit ourselves to him. So you know this verse really well, I think. Philippians 4, verse 19. And my God will supply every need of yours according to his riches in glory in Christ Jesus. Of course you know this verse, right? But do you believe it? Do you believe it for yourself and do you believe it for your church? We aren't called to have faith in the church or faith in the people of the church, because then it'll fail. But we are called to have faith in God and his words. It is the truth because God has said it, not because anybody else has said it. It is absolutely true when God says it. Things don't need to be going well in our terms for God's truth to be true. It sort of lays a foundation. Of what I really believe God can be doing when we give ourselves to him, in submission to him, as a church, as individuals. Next week I'm going to come back to it and go a little further on that, really in regards to some of the things that And the elders have just described a few things of the many things that I think God would like to do for us in 2020. And we're coming to our annual meeting. But we need to stop every once in a while and remember the thing that God has given us to do, the responsibilities we have, and the challenge that's there, and assess. And do a heart check and say, is my heart right on this with God today? Do I actually believe with confidence in the things that he has said? These things are true. These things will come to pass beyond a shadow of a doubt. But am I on board? And am I participating? Do I recognize that value, that huge value that's been given to me, the preciousness? And courage is simply a function of faith. If we believe these things to be true, the courage comes with it to step out and do something. And so as we conclude, let's just pause for a moment and just give you a moment of silence to bring your own thoughts before the Lord, and then we'll conclude in a song.